Today's program is brought to you by CloudRide, the first vape juice with flavors created by a James Beard award-winning chef. For more information, visit cloudridevapor.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. Today is a big day for us.
Special day.
Special day. Special day, man. I want to start by thanking everyone for listening to the show over the last 6 years. Today is actually our 200th episode of the Speakeasy.
Kaboom.
I can't even believe it. It's pretty crazy. We've had a lot of really amazing, interesting people on the show. And some really fun times, and today's guest, actually, I've been trying to get on the show since the very beginning, and I'm really glad he can make it in the studio today. Let's welcome Greg Bohm from Cocktail Kingdom, Mud Puddle Books, and Mace, and Boilermaker. God, you do a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah, I keep busy, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man.
Super happy to have you.
You know, it's well, actually, like, we're going to talk about your company, Cocktail Kingdom, but, you know, I just thought of this. Amore Amargo, your bar, actually, you're kind of like an outpost for Cocktail Kingdom tools.
I sell not everything they sell, but I sell a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a good place for people that are in the area looking to have a brick and mortar, go and pick up some Cocktail Kingdom barware.
If you're in town for a night.
Later than you, so I
get, yeah, exactly.
I get them when they're desperate.
I've definitely had to go by for a jigger or a spoon before going to an event in the city or something. I forgot, you know, like, yeah. Oops. Did bring a mixing glass.
Swing by for an old fashioned and pick up a mixing glass.
Yeah, you can't just go and buy tools. You have to like go buy tools and have a drink with Souther, right?
That's right. I call it drunken poker. I look over, I see someone with a drink, and then they've got a jigger in front of them. And then I look over again, and their drink's half gone, and they've got a spoon and a yarai. And then I look over, the chips are just stacking up, and I'm like, oh, two drinks. That's $380.
So, I know you're. Your family is in publishing, and that's what got you involved in started Mud Puddle Books. But how did that begin?
So my family owned a company called Sterling Publishing, which we've since sold to Barnes & Noble quite a few years ago now. But among the 4,000 books that we published, we also published a few cocktail books. Most notably, a guy named Salvatore Calabrese was one of our authors, and his book, Classic Cocktails, went on to be a bestseller. And through that, I got created an interest in cocktails. Actually, in 1998, I think, don't hold me to that year, I actually introduced Salvatore Calabrese to Dale DeGroff because we did the book launch at the Rainbow Room.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first light entree into the cocktail world.
That's not very light, man. That's pretty heavy,
it's
man.
A heavy hitter.
Well, I wasn't a major part of the event is what I meant. I was kind of just, it was my idea to do it at the Rainbow Room, but I wasn't that involved in the event.
But so you, had you not considered like bars and cocktails and spirits and things like that before? Or was that, like you said, that's what you got you into like cocktails, but were you... What were you drinking before then, I guess?
Well, I come from a family of drinkers, certainly. Growing up, I told stories about how it was a little bit embarrassing hanging out with my mom in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, going out, and she always wanted a sidecar, and she kind of grilled them. Do you use fresh lemon juice? I mean, she was lucky if they even knew what a sidecar was then.
Right.
So, and my father certainly had good spirits, good wine and good spirits around the house. So at that time, when I first met Salvatore Calabrese and Dale DeGroff, I like to drink, but I certainly was drinking basically, you know, anything I poured into the glass. I wasn't as particular. It was a couple years later when I found myself at least a week, usually 2 weeks a year, at Salvatore Calabrese's bar, which at that time was the library bar at the Lanesborough Hotel in London, that I really started enjoying cocktails. And that was my first time I was actually drinking in London.
Gentlemen,
yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this being the 200th episode of the Speakeasy, I've got a special guest here on the line.
Uh-oh.
Who I'm going to sneak in right now.
Yeah,
say hello if you could.
Hello.
Hey, Damon. It's the mom.
Hi, mom. How's it going, mom?
It's going great. I just want to congratulate you on your 200th episode and let you know how much I enjoy listening to your variety and the informative guest selections that you have. So happy 200th. Love you very much.
Love you, too. That's my one listener. The most important
number one fan.
Thanks, Mom. That's beautiful. Cool. All right. So you guys just met my mom.
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Cool. So
you cracked into getting into cocktails in London. Is it? Am I wrong when I think Mud Puddle Books is also, they make children's books, right?
Yeah. So
favorite part of going to Cocktail Kingdom is like all the kids' books and toys laying around, and then it's like serious cocktail stuff and antique.
Well,
bottles.
We also make dog toys and baby rattles in the shape of cocktail shakers as well. So pretty much cradle to grave. Mud Puddle Books is actually a children's book publisher. And my old family business, after we sold that, I started Mud Puddle Books. And then it was a couple years after we'd started publishing children's books, I'd actually amassed quite a large collection of antique cocktail books, which was after going to Salvatore Calabresi's bar. I'd come back to New York. I didn't know Angel Share existed at the time. I wasn't finding my outlet for cocktails, so being a book nerd, I started collecting cocktail books. And then Mud Puddle started doing exact facsimile reproductions of my favorite cocktail books.
When you were collecting these books, were you heading back to your like lab and making drinks for yourself, or were you just interested in reading the books and having that tactile?
Back 15, 14 years ago, it was pretty frustrating owning those books. I love them. They look beautiful, but what the heck is this ingredient? Yeah. What's that ingredient? Yeah. I can't get orange bitters.
Yeah.
So I actually packed up the books for about 5 years at one point, brought them back out, started selling a few on eBay, only things I had duplicates and triplicates, nothing I'm sorry that I sold. And I looked, and all of a sudden I could get orange bitters. I could get all these ingredients. What is falernum? And I could look it up. I don't think it was Google. I think it was Alta Vista back then or something. But I'd look it up on the internet and see what these ingredients were. And all of a sudden these books, which had been interesting, pretty, all of a sudden became exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember right when you guys were starting up, going into the office, like the old office before you moved to...
Yeah, you were an early adopter.
Yeah. And I remember hanging out with Nate Dumas and talking about he was collecting books and I was collecting tools, and at one point I remember emailing you and Wondrich, and I was like, which one of you guys is bidding against me on eBay right now? I'm trying to get this old Hawthorne strainer, let's take turns, let's be gentlemen about this. And it was it was a really fun game back then. And I think you probably bought all the existing copies of these old books, so.
They make them available to the public at the Cocktail Kingdom office. Yeah. There is a working research library, so people are allowed to come by appointment and actually use them. They're not sitting in a closet someplace.
That's good.
I've been in there. It's very impressive.
An unused weapon is a useless weapon. I like knowing that those things are there to be used.
Yeah, totally. And there's... We got a lot to talk about, man.
Yeah.
So back in those days, too, when Cocktail Kingdom first opened... you were bringing a lot of tools in, mixing glasses, shakers, strainers, spoons, everything, from different places, mostly Japan. And you've since started, at a point, you started folding in your own designs and recreations of old tools. How many times have you been to Tokyo, at this point?
I've only been to Tokyo 3 times. I'm actually going back again in 2 weeks with Jeff Beach Bumberry to do a little more research, since I haven't actually been there in 2 years.
Yeah, air quotes, research. It's the radio.
It's exactly what you said, is that I started bringing in barware from Japan, a little bit from Germany. After I met all these people the first people I met were Robert Hess and Audrey Saunders and Eric Lawrence, and people were talking about Japanese barware. And so I decided to bring in some Japanese barware and just make it available to people. It wasn't really a business. Certainly was no business plan. And it was very popular. People liked the Japanese barware. So for the first couple of years, it was Mud Puddle, then morphed into Cocktail Kingdom, and we set up the business as a separate business. And then Cocktail Kingdom was a distributor of Japanese and German barware. At this point,
WMF.
We brought in WMF. Also, Yukiwa was one of the Japanese brands.
I still have a bunch of Yukiwa stuff from back in the day.
Yeah, the Yukiwa. I know you use the Baron strainer things. They're great. I mean, the quality was really good. But they needed for many people, they needed a little bit of adaptation for the American market. For example, that the Yukiwa Baron strainer is fairly small. In Japan, they use slightly smaller mixing glasses than we use here and slightly smaller drinks. I mean, you often see a drink that is the glass is 4 ounces, not the liquid inside it. So everything's a little bit smaller. So we modified things. And then, of course, I started looking to where all these patents were and where all this history came from. And a lot of the what we call Japanese barware is actually based on American barware from the 1800s. So we started recreating old barware or adapting what was Japanese barware, which was originally American barware.
It's a full circle.
Yeah.
Do you think just a lot of that stuff, obviously Prohibition's fucked up everything, you know? Yeah.
The noble experiment, my ass. Yeah.
Do you think that, where did all these bar tools go? Were they just trash? Were they melted down to turn into guns during World War II?
It's interesting to think. A lot of them, when bar tools first started, they weren't made to be bar tools. That wasn't a thing. Their tins were very common, so there were two different sized tins. Stick them together, you got yourself a shaker. The first patented three-piece shaker, 1884, I believe, by Hauck in Brooklyn. It was the first patented shaker. And the first patented three-piece cobbler shaker. I think a lot of people didn't see the value in them. They weren't aesthetically beautiful. Both Dave Wondrich and I collect practical barware, antique barware that was used by bartenders in service. So it's hard to collect because a lot of the stuff isn't ornamental. It's not necessarily beautiful. A lot of the julep strainers were nice enough, so you kind of find those around. Some of the more practical julep strainers you don't find around as much because they weren't as beautiful. People thought they were sugar sifters or different things. Mm-hmm. And they weren't necessarily something when somebody sold their house or somebody passed away that they'd make sure to keep those small items.
That's such a shame, man.
Yeah, well.
I actually found a Hawthorne strainer, the one with the punched out holes in the flat. Like the one you guys actually...
The one that actually says Hawthorne on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great
strainer. I found one in this really great antique... I guess we'd call it antique mall in Austin, Texas, called Uncommon Objects. It's on South Congress. I found one. I was just walking around this place because I make sure I go there every time I'm in Austin, and I saw one hanging behind a bunch of other random tools, on a long nail, in a dark corner, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
Nobody else would have spotted it. It called out to you.
Well, here's the crazy thing: it didn't have the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Easily replaceable.
Sure. Yeah. It's actually silver plated. It's really tarnished, but
Does it have a bend in the handle or is the handle straight?
It has the bend in the handle.
All right. So that's the original because the straight handled one, which says Hawthorne on it, was made until 1977 with one of the last customers actually being the Concorde, as in British Airways on the Concorde. If you flew it, they were using that strainer.
What?
Yeah, but not the one you're talking about. It's quite a bit older. That if it has the bend in it, you're going back 40 years before that, 50 years before that.
Nailed it. I think I got it for $16.
You got an eye for...
Dude, I can't even believe I saw it. And actually, you know what? What's the dumbest thing about this whole situation is that I didn't buy it immediately.
I had to think about it.
I got back to Brooklyn and I was like, what the fuck was I thinking, man? So I called up Uncommon Objects, and I was on the phone for about 20 minutes just directing the guy to the... So it was off to the right, and then you walk that way, and then it's I think it's four or five booths down. It was on the side of this thing. It's behind a bunch of other shit on a nail. Yeah. And they finally found it. It was this huge success moment, and they shipped it out to me. And I think with shipping, it was $16. But
16?
16.
Oh, I thought you said 60.
That wouldn't have been bad either.
But of course no one knew what it was, especially it didn't have the spring on it. But, so that's how I got that.
That's amazing.
But it's really great that when you guys started recreating that strainer, which was the original Hawthorne before they started putting prongs on the side to where it would sit on top of the shaker.
Prongs were a guy named Lindley. The Lindley was the strainer without the prongs. And then a guy named Pick actually added the prongs at a later date. First one prong and then two prongs were added, I think, 1906 or 1908.
It's amazing.
Crazy.
Just the evolution of the bar tools, man.
And a little bit of lack of evolution.
Yeah.
they evolved, then they devolved, and now we're Hopefully, Cocktail Kingdom's brought it back to where it was, and we're making slow progress on improving things.
Where in the chain of all these things? Because it's a weird thing. The only thing I collect that's old is whiskey, but I don't collect it. I drink it, and also
you collect it in your belly.
I'm a consumer. I'm not a collector. I'm a consumer. I consume that stuff. But I do have those. You've seen them at a Maury Margo. It's weird that I'm the guy who stirs, but I have the old handled shakers that look like a cobbler with a spout on the side.
Yeah.
Where do those fall into this? They're from the 30s.
Those are a little bit decorative. Yeah, they're mostly from 1938.
I fell in love with them watching the Thin Man movies.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. I mean, they were patented in 38. Doesn't mean they didn't exist before that. But yeah.
You can look at it and you can see how when it's the handle on one side and the spout on the other, if you turn it so that you can't see those really, it looks like a giant cobbler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it was a cobbler that was adapted to hide from during Prohibition, so you could hide things in plain sight. Mm. A lot of those shakers that look like that. I mean, I have ones that have a juicer apparatus, so it's a three-piece shaker. You turn over the top, and they claim it's a juicer. But that was pretty much so you could say it was a juicer, so you weren't saying you had a cocktail shaker.
I saw one of those that was just the size to make. It was barely bigger than this plastic tumbler here, 10 ounce. Mm-hmm. And it had the top that flipped over with the juicer inside.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're cool stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. People don't always know it when they come across it, but
yeah, most of those shakers that I have, I've bought at, you know, random whatever. I have more than one of them I've paid $10 for, and it'll say on the sticker or the tag, it'll say old coffee urn.
Yeah.
And I'll pay the $10 and then I'll go, by the way, this is a cocktail shaker. I would have paid probably five times as much for this.
That's kind of cruel. Now
you're an asshole.
I let them know for the next time. This time I'm getting a deal.
Fair enough.
But if you see these again, it's not a coffee urn.
Yeah.
And I never buy them if they don't have the screw cap for the spout.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. If all three pieces aren't there, it's worthless.
Yeah, agreed. You're not going to find the same replacement part.
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah. Unless Cocktail Kingdom starts remaking
this. We sell replacement parts. The one thing at Cocktail Kingdom with the cobbler shakers, we actually sell the top separately because, I mean, it's not a point of, you know, not a big money maker for us, but it's just out of respect for bartenders. If somebody throws away the top, you want to be able to keep using it.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, that's definitely a common thing. Well, actually, on the subject of, aren't you guys like just selling the springs for Hawthorne strainers?
We do just sell the springs for Hawthorne strainers, so you can buy different types of Hawthorne strainers. If you don't want the ones that we're making, you can replace it. You use our high quality coil on somebody else's strainer, or if you want to just replace one from one of our strainers, they fit.
Well, that's perfect that you're doing that now, because I've had this Hawthorne strainer without a spring for 7 years. That's great.
Now you have to take your $16 strainer and spend $40 getting our coil silver plated, and you'll be golden.
Get it silver plated and you'll be golden. I love it.
Awesome, man. On that note, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Greg from Cocktail Kingdom.
On our 200th episode.
Boom. All right, so our sponsor lately has been
CloudRide.
They make these really cool. Like, you know, this is our, like, I think our fifth.
This would be our fourth time vaping. So yeah, the first time we didn't have the pen.
All right, because it was our first time to ever do this.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they make these vape juices for e-cigarettes and. We've tried a bunch of their flavors, which have been like I think.
But you keep referring to it as a cocktail kit for your lungs. So are we gonna mix a couple of flavors today?
Should we? I mean, the one that I'm putting in here right now is called the Tale of Taro.
Tale of Taro, taro root creme fraiche. Sounds pretty cool. Earthy
sounds,
and
sounds
sweet.
Creamy. I'm just loading this thing up right now. Yeah.
Preparedness.
I think I always overdo it in this thing.
That's because we're always under pressure. The clock's ticking.
All right, here we go. Oh, my God. Those are too much. That's delightful. Okay, so the whole idea of this company is that there's a James Beard Award-winning chef that
tastes like breakfast cereal.
It does. So you
it's
know,
like the sugar milk in the end of the bowl of breakfast cereal.
And you have to like wake and vape. this sounds pretty cool. Really cool packaging.
You brave enough, Greg? No. Nope.
Well, it's been a lot of fun trying all these different flavors, especially for two guys who've never used an e-cig before. Yeah, check it out. If you go to their website and use the code SPEAK, you can get, was it 10, 20%?
I think it's 20, right?
20% off.
I don't know. I don't have the paper in front of me.
I don't either. We just have the
paper. You get a percentage off if you go to their website.
There's a break. There's
and
a break.
Say, use the code SPEAK, like yep. Speakeasy.
So the website is cloudridevapor.com. Go check it out. Pretty cool stuff, man.
Created by chefs and tested by scientists.
You love saying that.
It says it right on the box.
It does. All right. CloudRad. All right, we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasies 200th episode on heritageradionetwork.org. And in the studio today, we've been speaking with Greg from Cocktail Kingdom. You know what, man? So we were talking a little bit about this before, about the recreation of these Japanese bar tools, which were actually American bar tools. And now, how often do you sell to Japanese bartenders?
It's become a pretty good part of Cocktail Kingdom's business selling to Japan right now.
That's got to be satisfying.
It'll be interesting when I'm back there, when I'm over there, I think starting September 15th for a week, to see how much of a presence. But definitely Japan isn't our biggest market for selling barware, but we sell quite a lot. There's a bunch of things that aren't available. Well, the first time I went to Japan, to Tokyo specifically, on business to go drinking and visit bars, I figured, what's the smallest thing I can carry around? I'll carry around an antique julep strainer because, you know, they look cool, they're easy to carry, and help me explain to people what I do. No bar I went to, I think 22 different cocktail bars, used a julep strainer or really knew what it was. And I went to some fairly significant cocktail bars with very knowledgeable bartenders who knew a lot about cocktails, but they didn't know what a julep strainer was.
So they only used Hawthorne's.
They only used Hawthorne strainers with the coil. So my little gimmick was a little bit lost on them. But
well, you introduced them to something new.
Certainly I tried to. And then I actually had an interpreter with me, so it helped a little bit. And now we sell a lot of julep strainers to Japan.
It's crazy.
And swizzle sticks.
Swizzle sticks.
Swizzle sticks.
Yeah, well, Cocktail Kingdom buys the world's harvest of swizzle sticks. World's commercial harvest. So if you're in Martinique by the airport, you might find one or two, but we actually buy all the rest.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's crazy. It's like the Smuckers.
Walele.
Yeah, Walele. Yeah.
It's like Smuckers. They buy all the Concord grapes. All of them. That's it. That's why they're so like, chefs freak out if they see them because they're like, oh my God, Smuckers didn't get these.
That's awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I think it's notable that, I mean, I always say, like we say it all the time, that we kind of live in our little bubble here, but, you know, you do also, I've gone to a lot of people's houses who are, like, just enthusiasts of cocktails who have your bar tools. I think that's incredible, you know? It's changed the, you know, like the three-piece cobbler shaker set with, like, the jigger on the handle, that, you know, like the bar kit from, like, you know, Bed Bath and Beyond, you know, right. Like people actually give a shit about their bar tools, and it's impressive. And it's like, it's a really great conversation piece when someone goes to like your Reserve collection, which is incredible.
Beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
The what's the Black Diamond?
The Black Diamond bars. That's made in Japan.
Okay. But that's was it $1,500?
No, I weigh $2,750.
Oh my.
It is actually
with this code SPEAK, you get a discount of some variety.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of our... I mean, it's actually the balance of the spoon is correct. So it's a solid silver spoon with a Swarovski crystal and I think 12 black diamonds around it. But it is well balanced. It is actually meant to be used. But there's an older gentleman in Tokyo who actually makes them by hand, and he can make one a month.
Wow.
That's we incredible. Do not sell one a month.
So you have a backlog, even though he's only making one a month. But speaking of that, I think it's fascinating to me that you've been doing what you've been doing for a fair amount of time, but your products are likely in every cocktail bar of note on the planet.
Not only cocktail bars, actually. We were talking
and
about
homes as well. Like, yeah, I mean,
no, not even that. So we were talking actually before the show about how You were saying you went to like a Scandinavian like metal bar.
A Scandinavian Oslo metal bar.
Yeah.
And I'm there and I'm like, okay, this is cool. And there's some great cocktail bars in Oslo as well. And I was just there. It's this place called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Kniven, something like that. It's knife. And
sure.
And they're playing heavy metal. It's a nice bar. I look over. Sure enough, there's a Corico strainer there. and they had a couple of our bar spoons and stuff. And so it's funny. In a dive bar in Oslo.
I mean, that's fascinating. But and then what you just said about the consumer, you know, at my shop, 70% of the things I sell are to consumers.
Well, if you
and
think
then
about
that's 30% is just, you know, bartenders who are maybe not from New York who are visiting my bar. And then a chunk of the remainder is definitely bartenders who are like, shit, I forgot something. I'm just going to swing by at Mori Margo. They're open at 11.
I always compared it to fancy knives. I mean, if you see that chefs are using a specific brand or quality of fancy knife, I mean, if you're a home chef,
sure,
your home cook, you're going to want good stuff as well.
But yeah, they literally watch us use the tools at a Mori Margo, and then they grab one off the shelf and put it in front of themselves.
Yeah.
It's easy. You know, like we were talking about before the show as well, like, you know, like when you go to a dive bar and you see that, oh man, there's Carrico tins and, you know, that's an actual like bar spoon. That's like a Hoffman House bar spoon. Mm. It's like, it takes that, like that one person to care.
Yeah.
And like bring in like a nice set of bar tools so that they can do something. And you're like, wait a minute. Like the thing to me is like when I see good bar tools in a bar, like could be the shitty. I could be at like fucking Chili's in like, you know, Gary, Indiana.
You love Chili's.
I do love their Southwest egg rolls are amazing. but like, if I see some good bar tools behind the bar, then I'm like it could be the shittiest place, like some shitty dive bar, some like crappy fucking honky tonk, whatever. If I see good bar tools, then I'm like, oh, I can.
There's a sparkle. There's a chance you could get a decent Negroni. Yeah.
For me, the litmus test was always the Yarai mixing glass a few years ago. If I saw a Yarai mixing glass, I walked into a place in Montreal a few years ago, probably 4 years ago. I was like, oh, they have a Yarai mixing glass. Let me try a cocktail. Now, for me, that's be a little bit more. If they have like two or three pieces of quality barware, then I'm often going to, hey, let me try this. Let me try a cocktail.
How do you feel about, like, you know, they say, you know, what is it? Impersonation is the highest form of flattery or whatever. But now I see like Libby makes a glass pitcher that certainly kind of harkens to the original Yarai.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cocktail Kingdom owns the name Yarai. We own the name Corico. We own a lot of the things. If people don't violate our intellectual property, I mean, as long as they're making high quality things.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, the only time it upsets me, there's a couple brands that make things that look similar but aren't well made and don't last. And as a consumer, that would be upsetting as much as a business person, that's upsetting. But I don't mind a little bit of competition or even a lot of competition. It just, we keep having to raise the bar.
pun intended.
We keep having to, you know, make better barware and create other things. The reserve line, as you mentioned, which we have mixing glasses, which are made of lead-free crystal that are then carved by a guy in a Western Pennsylvania whose family is an Austrian glass cutting family and uses kind of antique machines to cut the glass. So we keep making things nicer, but of course those glasses are also super smooth on the inside, so they're quiet when you stir. It's a battle to keep the quality high and the aesthetics a little bit nicer and a little bit nicer.
Now, you guys have always had like going into the office, it's always a lot of fun because like you have your prototypes and they're like,
yes.
Don Lee's always like, send it back.
Yeah. Crazy. No, it's our quality control is insane. Yeah. I mean, the Corico tins have, we had a slight problem with them at one point where the mold had broken and the manufacturer didn't tell us that we had to remake it. They wanted to send us like 10,000 and like, no, they're not exactly right. Like, we'll give you a discount. No, we don't want a discount. We want the Corico tins to be Corico tins.
The melt same these as they fucking are. Things.
We did. Melt them down.
That's amazing.
I have a qualm with you, by the way.
Right. Uh-oh. What's that?
Some friction
on
the show.
Let's deal with it right now.
Some friction on the show.
I came to you about... First of all, how long has Cocktail Kingdom been around now?
Roughly 2008. I think we switched the name from Mud Puddle to Cocktail Kingdom in 2009.
So it was then. No, I'm kidding. It was probably around... Because I was working at Primeats at the time, and we opened in 2008. So it was probably 2009. Mm-hmm. I came to you. I don't know if you remember this.
Let's see what it is.
We talked about it, about doing like a custom bar spoon and julep strainer.
Oh, but I know where this is going.
But I wanted to do it in gunmetal.
And you were like, nah, can't be done.
It's not going to work.
Possible.
I think, like, it's going to be
oily. In my youthful ignorance, I didn't think it was possible.
And now you have like a whole line of gunmetal tools, man.
Well, I
multi-inspired.
Yes, absolutely. That lived with me all this time in some place in my subconscious. And it's now been born.
All right. Well, just, you know what? I forgive you.
All right. Thank you.
So you've got the reserve line. And then also just as recently as last Wednesday, was it?
Monday, yeah. Last Monday.
But all right.
Tuesday. Actually, we're neither of us right. It was Tuesday.
What happened on Tuesday?
At Astor Center.
Yeah.
The Wonder kind of opening
I was
party.
Doing my crazy LaFrench thing still.
We launched a collection of barware, the David Wondrich Classic Collection of Barware. So it's funny, when you were talking earlier about us competing on eBay, that was definitely one of the other people was David Wondrich. And back then on eBay, you could kind of see who you were bidding against. It wouldn't give their full name, but it would give enough. And his was the same as his email address, his thing. So you kind of knew it was him. So we actually both collected as do you, practical barware. And so we put our heads together, figured out what was the best practical barware from 1800s and early 1900s, and we've now created the first thing we launched is a punch set. So David Wondrich knows a thing or two about punch, wrote a book about punch.
Yeah.
And so we created ladles.
He owns the doesn't he like have the copyright on the term punch?
Really?
Or something like that? I'm pretty sure that's
I'm not sure.
If it's not true, I love that it's
It's lore.
And of course, working with Wondrich is interesting because we're making a lot of the barware, the ladle, which has a wooden handle, but it's made out of EPNS, electroplated nickel silver. Yeah, manufacturers aren't really used to working with that anymore because it was one of the original anti-corrosive materials, but other things are cheaper. But we were using it. So it's silver-plated handle, but it's actually about 30% heavier than stainless steel. So when you pick up this ladle, you may not notice it's 30% heavier, but you're like, wow, that ladle feels really well. It pours really well. So we just released, punch bowl, ladle. We're going to be releasing more barware with Dave Wondrich. And also we did little punch glasses, which are just 3 ounce, similar to a sherry glass. The idea is, as Wondrich will explain, that you want a smaller glass, so you have more reasons to go back to the punch bowl, which is this...
That's the center of attention. Yeah,
so it's a water cooler.
That's where...
You don't want a big, 16-ouncer and not have to go back. You want 3 ounces and go back every few minutes.
Yeah.
The conversation lively.
There's actually, I saw that I was there that night for the release, and, they're beautiful, man. The bowl is beautiful. The ladles are extremely beautiful. And I got to see some of the tools you're going to be recreating. I guess they're... coming out in early November?
Yeah, very early November. We have a line, a further extension of the line. So first it's punch stuff, and then we're doing general barware, like a Lindley strainer, Lindley pick strainer, which is a variation on the second strainer ever patented.
It's cool, man. That's so cool. Yeah. And the punch bowl is awesome. It has a quote in Latin, of course, it's Wondrich, on the inside. And I'm trying to remember what it says. It's basically...
I forget the literal translation, but it's basically the Latin version of shut up and drink.
Yeah, it's like eat up, drink up. This won't be
so
here
not
forever.
Only if I get the Wondrich tools, will they be beautiful and functional, I'll be smarter.
Yeah, you're going to learn some Latin. But it was fun. Even the packaging we designed, the art team at Cocktail Kingdom designed the boxes to look the way... we didn't print directly on the box. We actually... printed on a piece of paper and then had it pasted onto the box because that's what would have been done back in the late
1800s. Well, and also,
I noticed recently that your packaging game is dialed up quite a bit.
Well, all the books, they're always the packaging is. Yeah.
Well, it's killer. Actually, you guys are both right. So the books, we weren't paying attention to our packaging, to the detail on the packaging as much, but we were paying attention to the books being exact facsimile reproduction. So now we're going back and redesigning the art team, pretty much Jeanette and Victoria at Cocktail Kingdom are redesigning all of our packaging to be nicer, to fit better within the aesthetics of the actual barware line.
I still like the Hugo Insulin book, just straight up chipboard cover. I mean, it's awesome. But
that's what the original one looked like.
So. I've been carrying CK stuff at Amorpher since we opened, basically, and I can remember back that Yara's used to come in a brown box with no
labeling.
Well,
now it's
we didn't have an looking. Art department back then. It was like me and two people.
Box with some, you know,
hey, man, it was
styrofoam peanuts inside.
Utilitarian.
We're getting towards the end of the show, but I did want to talk about very quickly, at least mention you're involved with a couple of bars.
Yes.
Mace is
delicious.
A great place. Nico DeSoto. You want to talk about the speed stick?
Come on, man. You told me that, see, he had a bone to pick. I have one too. You come to my bar pretty frequently, although I haven't seen you in a little while. And I'm standing there. I've had my 40 centimeter CK spoon that the head got chopped off.
It went
through the dishwasher, okay. A commercial dishwasher, and it got slipped down, and the blade just took it off. And at first I was pissed, but then I was like, well, I mean, my grandfather has a glass pitcher on his bar with a glass rod. I can just stir with this rod. It'll be great.
Yeah.
And then not only was I less angry, it was my go-to for 3 years. And people would ask me about it, and I would say, oh, I call it the speed stick. And you were there one day, and you talked to me about it. And then a couple weeks later, months, maybe a year, I don't know, the outcomes, the DeSoto stirrer.
Well, apparently I'm sitting with both of the people that created the Cocktail Kingdom barware.
We just plant seeds, man.
Yeah, the double teardrops, the Nico DeSoto double teardrop stirrer.
But then
stirrer.
I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I don't care what it's called. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Nico, and I was like, oh, the DeSoto, that's pretty cool. And he's like, the what? I'm like, why didn't you call it the Teague, man? Come on.
Well, okay.
He didn't even know what it was. He was like, what? What are you talking about?
Well, he did help create. Actually, yeah, Nico always would stir with the backside of the spoon, so yeah. The spoon wasn't necessary.
And Nico's over at Mace, which is one of the top 50 bars in the world.
Crushing. Yeah.
Congratulations
Thank
on that.
Thank you very much.
So that it's a really incredible cocktail bar in the East Village. Everyone should go out and check. If you haven't been to Mace, you should check it out. But also, the other bar that you're involved with is kind of the more like
neighborhoody. Get
like,
in here and have a good time.
Yeah, it's called Boilermaker, and it's on. Was it First and First?
First and First.
Yeah. We were hanging out there the other night, actually, after the Wondrous thing, and I was just like, man, I realize that every time I come into the city, I always stop at this bar. Like, it just happens. Like, it's kind of like going to the Holiday Cocktail Lounge. You just end up there. Like I've got a meeting, you know, somewhere over there, but, like, I end up going by a Boilermaker every time. Like, just pop in and see Sam, you know? And, like, I have a beer and a shot, and, like, I love the
Boilermaker.
Yeah, it's a Boilermaker, man.
And yeah, man, we want to create a place that's a kind of bar. I mean, to me, Mace is a bar I go to once a week, once every 2 weeks, maybe. It's a spice-based cocktail program. And then Boilermaker is the kind of place that I created, you know, with my partners to be a place you go to like twice a week.
Yeah.
So it's equal parts, you know, beer and cocktails and then burgers. Great. And now we started serving pancakes. I don't know if you heard about this.
Midnight pancakes.
Starting at midnight, 7 days a week, we release a pancake menu.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. I mean, I don't think the word's totally out there yet, but definitely it's making a bunch of people happy. It is now.
That's awesome, man.
Midnight pancakes, Boilermaker. First and First.
Yeah, I love it, man. It's always like, especially because I always get the F train to come back to Brooklyn. I live, you know, in Carroll Garden, so it's like, I can't not.
You gotta
go
walk
there.
Right by, yeah. You have to hide your face from the window.
I'm a pretty, like, recognizable guy, so I can't, like, really
sneak by.
But yeah, they're both great places and do great things there. And, man, and I just want to say personally, like, from, like, a person who, being a bartender and a bar manager and being a cocktail enthusiast, I think everyone can agree with this.
Yeah.
That you've done an amazing thing for our community with the modern renaissance of classic cocktails and just not even classic, bars just in general. We wouldn't be as well-heeled. Yeah. If it wasn't for you, you know, publishing Salvatore Calabrese's books, and then eBay battling with me and
falling down the rabbit hole of.
But it takes a certain kind of person to like really like go down that rabbit hole and execute like some really amazing things that, you know.
I was lucky to have an amazing team. I mean, I had people around me that were used to sourcing things and you know, different people with different talents, and it's one of the times where a hobby got out of control and turned into a business, and it actually worked out. Yeah.
Totally, man. And then also, I also want to thank you for being our guest today on the show with me and Souther.
Congratulations on your 200th episode.
Thanks so much, Greg. I really appreciate it. I can't even tell you. You know, it's been 6 years I've been trying to get you on this damn show. Ethan's been on.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it's been a real fun time hanging out with you here. And, you know, actually, for everyone that's listening out there live, we're going to be hanging out here out at Roberta's from 4 to... whenever we run out of gin. Brooklyn Gin is a sponsor, which I love and I work with them.
And, gin tonics on the patio.
We're just going to drink a bunch of gin tonics, probably eat some pizza and hang out and just enjoy each other's company. So
that's great.
To all the listeners and to all the past guests for the past 200 episodes, I want to just, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. We've really grown this very nerdy cocktail show into something that I hope is...
Special.
For
and everyone can enjoy it.
Yeah. And I want to say a big thank you to Souther Teague, who is officially my co-host.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Started out just like, hey, man, yeah, I'll come in the studio. And then now we're equal parts, man.
Bonded.
And thank you to Heritage Radio Network for allowing me and everyone else who's been on the show to say fuck about 3 billion times.
Yeah.
All right. I also want to thank Patrick Martins and Jack Inslee, especially, for letting this happen. Big guys. All right, that's it. I'm going to stop thanking everybody, and we're going to go drink some gin and tonics.
Yeah, if you check out the website today, you'll see a photograph of a carved half dollar that I had commissioned for the 200th episode of the Speakeasy. The half dollar's in Damon's pocket right now, but the photo is going to be on the profile picture of Speakeasy Radio today.
You're check a hell out. Of a guy, man.
I got it done by a lady named Hobo Shane, who carves coins. Pretty cool. Check it out.
All right. That's it for this week. Hey, man, here's to 200 more. Right, guys?
Here they come.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.